Good evening, friends. Not so many years ago, diplomacy was an art practiced behind closed doors. Only on rare occasions was it possible for citizens to get a glimpse of what was going on. Often they didn't find out until years afterward. Nowadays, we've gone in for open diplomacy in a big way. The people are sharing in the making of decisions on foreign policy. They make their views known to Congress through letters, telegrams, and public opinion polls. And Congress is largely guided thereby. Hence, it is of the utmost importance that all of us get a well-balanced view of what's going on. Otherwise, we can't arrive at reasoned, collective opinion on the great issues which confront us. For this information, we rely heavily upon the great news services, which feed the press and the radio. But in the very nature of news, as generally conceived, there's a signal weakness when it comes to providing a well-balanced view of world and national developments. The news plays up that which is sensational, unusual, untypical. It is apt to relegate to a position of minor importance some happening of deep significance which lacks dramatic appeal. For instance, a week or so ago, the members of the United Nations Atomic Energy Commission reached a complete stalemate and determined that it was useless to try any longer to reach agreement. The commission for months had been faced with the problem of fundamental differences between the Russian and American views. When it finally gave up altogether, there wasn't anything very dramatic about it. Hence, it was lost among more sensational items. Yet, it was a development of profound significance. It seems to me, therefore, that we need to give serious consideration to ways and means by which the people can be kept informed concerning such important matters as this. The radio provides a means through which this could be done. Every broadcasting chain makes its facilities available at irregular intervals for reports from high government officials. Why wouldn't it be a good thing if such reports were to be broadcast regularly at a certain time each week? Sometimes such reports could be made by the President. At other times, the Secretary of State, the Secretary of National Defense, or the Secretary of Commerce might speak to the people concerning some noteworthy development in his particular department. Because such a series of programs might savor of governmental propaganda, an election year would probably be a poor time to start them. But whenever they are started, an equal amount of time, say a quarter of an hour, should be made available to any significant body of public opinion taking issue with governmental policy on a particular matter. With study, it would be possible to schedule such broadcasts regularly at a time when most of the American people could listen. An effort might be made in local communities to avoid meetings at those particular hours, which would take people away from the radio. And it might be possible to arrange all over this broad land of ours discussion groups which would carry on the talk after they've heard the pros and cons over the radio. If the whole nation were to dedicate one evening a week largely to the study and discussion of public issues next fall and winter, we would have in this nation of ours a public opinion informed to a degree never before achieved. Good night. Good evening, friends. The war in Palestine is such a confusing affair that it might be useful to attempt to give an overall view of the situation. The news reports have given the impression that the Arab forces have been winning great victories. Such is hardly the case. Attention has been centered during the past week on the battle for Jerusalem. Under the partition plan, Jerusalem was to be an international city. It has a large Jewish population, but it is entirely surrounded by land largely populated by Arabs and designated as a part of the Arab portion of Palestine under the partition plan. The territory marked out for the Jews by the partition plan, that part of Palestine which now comprises the new nation of Israel, is so far virtually intact. There have been skirmishes along the borders, and the Arabs have moved into those borders. But if the fighting continues, the real test of strength is still ahead. And as we have pointed out before on these commentaries, the Jews have a first-line army of 40,000, well-equipped with modern weapons, and a second-line force of around 50,000. The Jewish army, called the Haganah, has a small air force, hopes to get more planes. The Arabs have large numbers of men, but only the British-led and equipped Transjordan Legion of 8 or 10,000 men constitutes a really efficient modern fighting force. The United Nations has been trying to find a formula to stop this war in Palestine. Their ceasefire order was accepted by the Jews and rejected by the Arabs after a time extension this noon. There was a twofold purpose to this ceasefire order, as I analyze it. First, it was an assertion of international authority over the country following the relinquishment of the British mandate on May the 15th. Second, it was devised to provide a basis for future policies by the great powers. The British have alliances with the Arab states made after World War I. It is because of these treaties that a British-led and equipped fighting force serves King Abdullah of Transjordan. Now that the Arabs have defied the UN ceasefire order, the British will have justification for withdrawing their aid to the Arabs under existing treaties. The Arab defiance of the UN order also will give the United States a good excuse for canceling the arms embargo against the Jews. Now, whether Britain actually will withdraw her aid from the Arabs, now that the ceasefire order has been defied, remains to be seen. The British are, of course, very anxious to remain on the good side of the Arabs. But Britain also has to consider the United States, from which she is receiving very substantial aid under the Marshall Plan. And she also has to consider her commonwealths. South Africa already has recognized Israel. The United States also wants to keep on getting Arab oil, but it may be that the State Department now realizes that the Arabs want to sell us oil just as badly as we want to buy it. However, the whirling dervish policies of the administration on Palestine make it risky to prophesy what it may do in the matter of the embargo. Again, let me remind you that among the Arabs there are bitter rivalries. King Abdullah of Transjordan would like to take over all the Arab part of Palestine for himself, even if he doesn't get any of Israel. But he will certainly be opposed in that by Egypt to the south and by Syria and Lebanon to the north. Considering all these factors, the outlook for Israel is still good. Good night.